Hey everyone, Jay here from Project Unity. Now despite the current circumstances, I do hope that you all had a really good festive holiday, and I wish you all a very happy new year. Personally, I do believe this is going to be an important year for further transparency on the UFO-UAP subject, and to kick off 2021, I'm very pleased to say that tonight I'm going to be speaking with both Chris Bledsoe and Bob McGuire. Now, Chris Bledsoe has become a prominent name within the UFO community due to his ongoing experiences with the phenomenon, experiences which have garnered the interest of members of the scientific community and even from within the US government and its associated intelligence branches. Experiences which challenge a lot of people's concept of the possible, and with that challenge comes the inevitable skepticism from some, which is pretty much unavoidable within this subject, especially when you've had encounters with the phenomenon that are as profound as those that have been experienced by Chris Bledsoe and his family. Now, this is going to be a conversation about the phenomenon, about consciousness, perhaps even about the overall trajectory of the human race in the coming years, as well as, of course, some of the specific experiences that Chris has undergone and what he has taken away from these experiences. But this is a conversation as we enter into the new year that I believe to be important on a multifaceted level, because Chris is not just an experiencer of the phenomenon. It would seem that he has been, for lack of a better term, selected as what could be considered a messenger for the phenomenon, or for some aspect of this phenomenon. And we're going to get into all of that tonight. Alongside Chris, we are also joined by our mutual friend Bob McGuire. For those that don't know about Bob, he served within the United States intelligence community from 1982 over to 2011, before going on to found the Humes Research Center for National Security and Technology over at Virginia Tech. And he has also since become quite a prominent name within the UFO community, most notably for his involvement with and support of the UAP tracking and analysis tool known as SkyHub. It's going to be a fascinating discussion, and so without further delay, it is my pleasure to welcome both Chris Bledsoe and Bob McGuire onto the channel. Happy New Year to you both, and how are you?
I'm doing great, Jay, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me, Jay. I'm happy to be here with you, and Happy New Year to both of you and to everyone listening.
Well, thanks, man. And I want to thank you both for being here to have this discussion. Bob, thank you for being, you know, basically the middleman in getting Chris and I connected. And of course, thank you, Chris, for choosing to be here to tell us your story. I want to focus this talk more on what's happening now. You've had some fantastic interviews about your core experiences, which started this journey for you. I personally became aware of your story through the coverage by Richard Dolan, where you guys did a series of interviews which detailed the major chapters of your experiences. And for all of those listening, links for Richard Dolan's interviews with Chris will be in the description box below, and I'd highly encourage all of you who haven't done so yet to check those out when you can. But with that being said, I think it's important to give a little bit of an overview for those listening right now who are not familiar with who you are. So Chris, would you be able to give those who are not aware of your story just a bit of a brief overview of the events? I understand that there is a lot to unpack here, but how did this all start for you, and where have these experiences led in your life?
Well, I could take all night with that small question. You know, a very small question has a big answer, but
I know.
Let's just say to make it very brief, I'll be 60 years old my next birthday. I am a commercial pilot. I still have my certificate. I was a builder for 20 years, built upwards of 100 homes a year, more than 20 years. I've done it all my life, but a general contractor building and selling homes. And along about Desert Storm, it got very bad, and I developed Crohn's disease in my early 20s, 25 or 27 years old. And I was in and out of the emergency room and on heavy medication for 17 and a half years. And through losing my business because of sickness, stress makes it worse. And the more stress, the worse Crohn's is. I was in the restroom as many as 15, 20 times a day. So I was unable to work for almost 2 years there. And my whole empire was falling apart, and I was 46 years old. Had a near-death experience from medication, being over-medicated, and the doctor that was medicating me died, one of my doctors, and was not checking my blood properly. And it led to some kind of poisoning that took me to the hospital and I came up out of my body and I saw my wife crying and I heard the doctors talking. And one said, "This sure is a shame. This is the 113th person that this doctor has injured." And so after that, it took me a year and a half of recovering mentally, physically. I was drained to the core. And my father, we had sold our home, moved out. My kids were all small. Yeah, I say small. The oldest was 17 out of four. The youngest was like 9. We moved beside my father, and he talked me into trying to get out and going back to work some. And so late October, September, I took a crew of men down to the beach and started a job, and 4 months later finished it and came back home the late 2006 for Christmas. And then January the 8th of 07 is when the guys finished the project, came home to get their check. I was already home. My son and I, family, long story short, that's where it all started. That day, January the 8th of 07, I went down to the Cape Fear River with these three guys and my son to go fishing, and ended up in a missing time that was over 4.5 hours. I was brought back, and there was a manhunt that ensued, and a lot of people in the area saw these things. 7 or 8 people reported them. And
these were the orbs of light. Was it the orbs of light that you were seeing at this point?
Yeah, they were big orbs, orange, big as a school bus when they were down low. Yeah. But they were sort of egg-shaped, football, however you want to say it. They're wider in the middle. Looks sort of like an egg. But they would just turn from orange to white, very brilliant white, and then shoot off. I mean, when they were idling, like when they were sitting still, there was this blood red orange fire that looked like the fire was flying off. The tips was just flying off. It was rotating like round and around these things. And I don't know how much detail you want me to give here.
Well, like I said to everyone listening right now, a lot of this has been covered by your talks of Richard Dolan. And, you know, you've had some fascinating experiences starting with these orbs and going on to things. Well, I think the experience that really stands out for many as just simply extraordinary is the one that you had with what is known as the lady. And I know that, again, you've covered this extensively in previous interviews, but before we jump into some other stuff, would you mind just telling us about this experience with the lady? Because I'd personally love to hear this again.
Okay. So after that 07 event, the crazy thing is, Jay, I was healed from Crohn's. I never, after that day, I never had another symptom.
After the lady or the orbs? Sorry, just to make sure I'm...
These orange orbs
that took me.
And these same orange orbs that took me were these little glowing white beings, and there were some tall ones in there with them. But the little ones is what I've interacted with, and they were like babies, like children, not babies, three-year-old children maybe.
And these were the ones that had triangle patterns on them?
Yes, on their chest. They were glowing, like sort of like the moon.
From what I've heard, that specific detail regarding the triangles, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but that specific detail caught the interest of the CIA or at least some of the intelligence community?
Well, yeah, NASA, different ones. A lot of people... was really interested in that. And the lady, I had no clue. I was raised a Baptist, not a Catholic. I never knew anything about the lady and the Catholic religious, you know. So it's hard to understand. But on 5 years later, after that event on the river, I had gone through so much negative reaction, and my family and my children were literally harassed at times by kids in school, teachers, some supported them, that really would pull them to the side and say, I believe. But, you know, a 9-year-old girl coming home crying is a bad thing for dad. So for 5 years, I was well, and I was thanking the Lord for not being sick anymore, and I had this life back. But now I was in the worst place ever. I'm in a hole where the Baptist church and all the churches in my community. I live in North Carolina. Was a lot of the Bible Belt, right? And so my family members and other people around me just started making comments that I was either crazy or I was playing with demons, you see. And they'd come by the house when I was gone and put holy water in my yard and on my porch and stuff. And so I tried to tell the UFO world what had happened to me. And the day they came, the whole group of them, I reported my experiences with these little glowing entities that healed me and that I thought they were angelic beings. So they said, well, that's too much. So then the ridicule and the ostracization from the UFO world started. And so I'm in a hole, nowhere to go. Nobody would listen to me. Yet I had these entities telling me, you got to tell your story. You know what happened. You got to tell your story. Got to bring the truth to the world. This is what they're telling me.
Is that the small beings telling you that?
Small beings, yes. And so I just declined. I refused to talk about it anymore. And then on Easter of 2012, I was probably in a pretty low place then because I'm out at night looking at the stars every night and people wanted to come, but I pretty much pushed them away. But this stuff was happening in front of my family by then, my wife and my children, my mother, my dad, and family members that come visit. It would appear in front of them. You know, lights in the sky.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't tell anybody. And so on Easter of 2012, I went to bed, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, because of it being Easter, our daughter was the youngest, and our three boys loved video games, and now all the kids in the community would come, I say all, 8 or 10 sometimes, along with my three. We'd gang up and have these video game parties, and so our house was always full of people. And my wife, the good mother she is, she was staying with our daughter just so these boys don't get any ideas, right? So I'm sleeping alone in the back of the house. And at 3 a.m., Jay, I heard this loud, thunderous voice that was so loud. It was like if you were dead asleep and somebody dropped a bomb next door or an earthquake happened, you're going to wake up. Wow. Well, that noise was that loud in my sleep, and I jumped him up to a sitting position.
Was it a noise or words? Did it say anything?
It was a word. It said, arise, in a deep, thunderous voice. And so I sat up in the bed, and I looked straight at the clock, and it was 3 a.m. And I said, who's in here? I heard that. No word. And I stared in the dark, and I was looking. I was frightened. I knew they were there, or something was there. And I could make out this movement against the wall at the foot of my bed. And I don't know what happened, but next thing I know, I'm up. I'm completely dressed from my underclothes to shoes, socks, shirt, coat, pants, and out the back door I went. And I'm following these three shadowy figures. It's like they had control of me. So I was led out to where our dog kennel is, and I have witnesses that saw some creepy stuff there. And pictures of, I have a photo of a being standing there in daylight in the same location, same place where Chris Jr. and I put Nelly, Rosie, our Chesapeake, in on this being. It's in the Dolan interview. So I'm back to the same place at this dog kennel. And right when we got to there, this shadowy being reaches out with two hands and hands me this object that is so dark. I just reached out and it said, here, this is yours. you must keep. So I reached out and I took it in both hands. And when I did, it was the size of a, let's say, a chihuahua with fur and all, but no legs, no nothing to it. But I didn't, it felt alive. It was warm and kind of prickly. And so I dropped it immediately, not knowing what it was. And this being said, no, this is yours. You must keep. Do not lose this. And so I reached down to pick it up, and I'm afraid of it, what it is, because it felt so strange, and it's dark, and I look up, and this entity's gone. And somehow they had taken the fear from me at the river in 07. When everybody was frightened, I wasn't afraid. I was when I first walked up the hill. But that night, I was never afraid. So when I took this thing and I put it in the first kennel out of 15 or 10 kennels in this dog pen of my father's, enclosed, lights, concrete, roof over it. I go to the end and I slide, open the door and I stick it in there, thinking, well, if it's alive, it can't get away. It'll be safe. I've got it. And this has all happened pretty quick. And the minute I set it on the ground, this blast of air comes from behind the kennel, or I'm at the end of it, and this whole head of woods is full of hickory trees and oaks, big ones, some of them 80 feet tall. And so this big hickory tree, which I have in other videos with entities in it being illuminated by orbs, all of a sudden just kind of vanished in front of me, like this opening came, and out of this opening came this bull, about 1,200 pounds at least, looked as high as my chest to its back, and it's coming straight at me so fast that I have no time to get out of the way. It runs right over top, and I look up and I can see through it as it went over, and I thought, how strange. All at one time, I landed the flat of my back, so I rolled over quickly, thinking, I've got to get away from this bull. He's coming back. My neighbor had a dairy farm. And this is the same place I was raised. So the farm's long gone, but I grew up helping on the farm, helping put silage out for the cows. And so I'm pretty known. I know what I'm dealing with here. A cow, anyhow. So I knew to get out of its way. But long story short, when I hit my back and rolled over to my stomach, pushed myself up all in a second to my knees, as I'm raising my head up to look, it's glowing, this white light, bluish white light, has the ground illuminated in a 20-foot circle. And there is this woman that is no longer a cow, but she's, her feet are about 3 feet off the ground, which is about my chin level because I'm on my knees, right? And I'm shocked beyond anything. I was just frozen. And her dress was like all the stars in the sky twinkling as it wavered. And she had no shoes on. Her dress went to the top of her feet. And her arms were covered by this long silky dress out to her hands. And her collar was up around her neck. So she was in this beautiful white, beautiful dress. She had this golden hair, golden blonde and blue eyes, and was glowing this bluish white light. So as I'm taking all this in, she looks at me and she said, "You know why I'm here." And I knew why. Because for the last 5 years, I'd felt so much internal need to tell this story, but I was being held back by everyone. The UFO world wouldn't let me near a conference. They didn't want me because I was not what they were into, this nuts and stuff. And so I couldn't tell it to the local church. They had already told me I wasn't allowed to talk about it. I had to go, pray that it leaves. And so where am I at now? And she said, and there's a lot of things she said, and I've held a lot of it back for a long time. Maybe we get into that in a bit, but for she looked at me and she said, "This is your burden. You must keep. You have to tell what you know." Then she began to tell me that there were people in power in this world that were using the Book of Revelations as a script, like a movie script. They were wanting it to play out to bring about the end of the world. But that we could change that. We could change, she used two words, destiny and fate. I told this to some people many, many years ago. And she began to show me these visions of things to come. And they were very fearful. But she said, if you will tell this, if you will do this, I'll always be with you. And I will help you with witnesses and with photo and video. And in the first 5 years, I had never had a picture of nothing. Every time it would appear, I'd drag my camera phone out and boom, it would disappear. It would never let me take a picture. It knows your thoughts. Yeah. Everything you're thinking before you do it, it's already there. It knows if you're looking at it and your friend, it knows how to appear to you with 10 people standing around you and they never see it. So it's really intelligent. And so she said that they're trying to script out the Book of Revelations and that we had to warn the people and that there were troubling times ahead, that I don't like to talk about this kind of stuff because it draws negativity. But she said in the end, we'll win, and that the women would rise up and the divine feminine would usher in peace on earth. But before then, there would be trouble. And it was because of the manly, maternal ego and power that's trying to bring about the destruction of this society, these people. And that they didn't want it to happen. And so she just vanished right in front of me. I forgot about this thing in the pen. And I just made my way back to the house and collapsed at the back door, flat on the floor. And it was just the most amazing thing. And when I told it, what's crazy, the most, how they can arrange things. It's like my friend from NASA once told me to watch the movie, The Adjustment Bureau, because it's a lot like that. They can guide you or tear you down if they have to. So short of telling a whole lot more of her, what she told me, that was how I met her. And since that point, Jay, I think Bob can agree, the activity is ongoing and it's only getting greater. Through the holidays, it's through the roof. I was told she would help me with witness and photo and video. Well, I have hundreds and hundreds of photos and I don't know how many videos. I probably got 30 in the last month, last 6 weeks. Some very close.
Well, I mean, this is just, you know, it's one of the most profound, such a powerful story. And, you know, I personally, because there are still people who are skeptical, but I personally do absolutely believe you experienced what you experienced. And, you know, I believe that for two reasons. One, because of the sincerity in which you present yourself. You seem like a very sincere person, just, you know, from what the interviews that I've listened to and from the conversation we're having so far. But also because even though I haven't had a experience as intense as seeing a bull manifest and a lady appear from that, I've had my own close experiences with things that were basically are the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing now. So I can sympathize at least with the fact that something absolutely beyond my previous concept of reality came into my reality and changed everything for me. So like you said, there is more to this, that she has said more to you, and maybe we'll be able to get into some of this, even if there are some uncomfortable truths lurking in here. But before we jump into some of that
And also, before we jump into present day, I want to talk about the involvement from high-level scientists and US government officials in your case, because I know that there are elements of this where you have to be careful with what you say, but what exactly prompted this sudden interest from both the US government and the scientific community when it came to you and all the events surrounding you?
Well, remember 2007, the first when it happened. I didn't report it until October of that year.
Right.
It happened in January. In October, I finally got the courage to report it to MUFON, and then they called me back right away and wanted to come, and I'm like, oh no, this is just too much, because I actually thought I might be in a divorce situation if I reported it, because my family was so afraid. They wanted it to go away. But a year later, it came out, and in 08, about June, it was aired on Discovery, or July sometime. And within a week after it aired, my son Ryan calls and says, Dad, there's a man from NASA at the front door. He's huge. He's very tall. He wants to meet you. I said, okay, keep him at the house. I'll be home in an hour. And that was how it started. I came home. This friend of mine, he became a very dear friend, almost like a father figure to
our children. Is this Hal Povenmire?
Yes.
Right.
He was 59 years at NASA and was no little guy there. He was,
yeah.
You know, he was there before it was NASA. He worked with Wernher von Braun, and he worked with J. Allen Hynek for years. He was the debunker. That's
right.
What he did. But when he died this past Thanksgiving, and I was expecting him to come, and he was coming. We had plans, and he was 80 years old, and he slipped and fell and went in a coma and died the day after Thanksgiving, or 2 days later. But we were very tight, and he was the first of many different people that got involved. The book Diana wrote about Tyler, I introduced her to Tyler. I had been working with him off and on for 3 years ahead of that, and I met Diana after the lady. The lady came, and 2 weeks later, I met Diana at a conference. I would never go to a conference. I would never speak until the lady came. And crazy, however it works out, a week after the lady came, I get a call. Can you come and talk next week in Asheville? 6 hours away. I agreed. I said, heck yeah, I want to go. And before that, I would never talk. So that was all meant to be. Come to find out, Diana was looking a way to talk to me before that. And I would have never gone hadn't the lady come. But that caused a lot of things after that. You can imagine what's going on since Diana and I met, and how it ended up with the Pope. Through her, she's at the Vatican.
Yeah.
She's with all these people, the Pope, and they sent me stuff from there. Had a ceremony and put my picture of me in the Pope's picture, which they allowed her to go into the Vatican archives, along with Tyler and Brother Guy from Graham, Arizona. They placed my photo between the books of Copernicus and Galileo in the archives. It's there permanently.
Oh my God.
Yes. And the Pope sent me some photos of paintings from the Vatican, and said, with a warning, he said, these orbs are angelic beings, and that they don't know that their presence, when they're that excited, can harm the human body. But if you get too close to them, it can cause the stigmata, which is what St. Francis had. So they took his diagnosis, which they still have, all these records from way back, 1,000 years ago, detailed inquisitions and all. And they looked at his diagnosis with today's medical lens. And he has the same thing I have, which is RA. I developed RA about 7 years ago. So I was on chemo for it for a long time. I actually quit because of the coronavirus. But he sent these paintings, and there were orbs with angels coming out of them. And so, you know, I have a lot of reasoning to say what I say and to know what I know. I mean, I just like Dr. McGuire, you remember the lady said, when I will help you, when the time's right, I'll help you with witnesses and photos and videos, mm-hmm. right? Well, I sat back for 8 years again after after I met Diana. Here comes these writers from Hollywood, and they want to do this big thing. And so I agreed to be quiet about it for until they made this project. And Diana and I are involved in it together. And so what happened was, you know, some of these scientists from the government, the CIA, I have friends in the CIA, friends in the NSA, friends in national intelligence, friends everywhere. The National Reconnaissance Office had 3 or 4 friends from there. A highly secretive group.
And they all have an expressed interest in your experiences.
All of them. And they all ask about the lady because they know she's real. She appeared to the Indians as the white buffalo calf lady.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the Virgin Mary, see? That's just a name, I think, that was put to her. I think she's been here forever and ever and ever. I think she's what binds this whole world together, you might say. Mother Earth, Gaia.
Right.
I don't know. She's just she is what she is. And she's been around forever.
Am I correct in saying that Jim Semivan came to see you soon after your experience with the lady?
Yeah, it was probably 2016. He had to retire officially before he could meet us.
Right, right.
So we've become good friends. I met him not at my house. I met him in Pennsylvania at a friend's house, and really a lot of his friends in New York. I've been to bar mitzvahs with friends in the CIA, even the director. So, you know, they all know this. People are not stupid. The government is these people are geniuses. But everybody had to be quiet about it until 2016. After 2016 is really when disclosure came. There's just nobody realized it.
Is there any
specific this past year in early February or January, February, when the Navy said it's real?
Yeah.
Hey, it's real. We just don't know what it is. And everybody's still looking for disclosure. They want these aliens, you see. They want these spaceships and ray guns, but I'm afraid they're not going to get it.
No. What do you think that they're going to get instead if we have, further transparency on this issue as it goes forward through the public? I mean, you know, if we are going to see some unveiling of some degree, do you have any idea or any inclination as to what might be told?
Yeah, I think you're going to get more of it's real and more videos confirming it. But I don't think you're going to get a S-23B Star Cruiser with magic microwaves and stuff in it. It's just not going to happen. They're trying to figure it out. Dr. McGuire, he's very high up in the intel world, and he's still trying to figure it out like all of us. So, you know, if they have something, they do. But I've never been told about it. And the way the conversations goes with all these people, I suspect they're being genuine, most of them, because they want to know. They want to know what the lady said. They want to study these orbs. They can't catch them. I ask them all, why do you call me? What do you want with me? And they all say, well, it seems to like you and it don't us, but we'd like to know what it wants or what it is.
Do you ever initiate a form of contact with the phenomenon, or has this been something that has just happened around you, or is this something that you have actually tried to engage with? Like, I don't know if I'm sure you're aware of the idea of consciously contacting, like CE5 and things like that. Is that something that you do?
No, In fact, I didn't even know what all that meant till a week ago on a, email or on a Facebook. I was questioning about it. Somebody's like, you know, I did this CE5 work in the field. And I'm like, what is a field? Why is it work? You know, what is CE5? I didn't understand. And for me, I've got a relationship with this lady, and I have a life that weird stuff happens around all the time. Stuff moves around, flies off the shelves. Never dark. It's always interaction of some sort. I feel it before it comes. Dr. John Alexander witnessed that. I did it in front of him. I told him they're above us right now. And 10 seconds later, it appeared and flew off. So a lot of times, Jay, I'll be sitting in my workshop working on some equipment or whatever it is, work on all kind of things. I just get this feeling that I'm being called to come play, you might say. And I walk out and hear these lights come on in the sky, and here they come. Or like when Dr. McGuire came, he came on a Friday and it was rainy. It was late, and we had a wonderful time chatting, all our family and his wife, Sharon. And then Saturday rained all day, so we sat inside. And then Sunday, it started clearing up. And Sunday night, he's like, can we go outside and look at the sky? And I'm like, sure, I would love to. And we walked out to my little shed, and I initiated it by saying, okay, I'm here, this friend of mine, if you brought him here to witness this, then, you know, now's the time. And in a little simple prayer, I asked the lady, if it be her will, that she allow her angels to interact. And as soon as I said that, silently, boom, they started appearing. And Bob can tell you about the experience more. But Ryan filmed one of the orbs that flew by. And a lot of these orbs are not just the big ones in the sky. There'll be little ones that appear around us. And I have video of those appearing and flashing and beings coming out of them. So,
anything to add there, Bob?
So, yeah, Chris has the story exactly right. So, we go out and we observe. I don't know what to expect. I mean, I contacted him because of all the hoopla around TTSA and the government revealing videos. And I heard Richard Dolan do the interview, and I was on the Richard Dolan forum. So I just decided to email Chris and see if I could come over. And after a little while, Chris said yes. So I went over. We talked about all sorts of things for 2.5 days, and then we went out and observed. So Chris does CE5-like things in that he communicates with them silently with his consciousness.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But okay, just so through his own perspective. It's CE5-like, but he's not playing crop circle tones or any of that stuff.
No,
it's just a personal way he has of figuring out how to summon these things. Mm-hmm. And so whatever he did, all of a sudden, through the tops of the trees, this massive light turned on. It was brighter than Venus, and it moved off into the sky, did some unusual maneuvers, changed colors, started looking like it was boiling different colors, and it moved off towards the horizon and disappeared. And I went, well, that was weird. And then his son, Ryan, comes out. And as soon as Ryan comes out, I says, sure would be neat if Ryan could see this with us. And boom, they're right in the same spot.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Big, huge thing came on. And it moved across the sky, did some maneuvers. Ryan got a video, and he was so excited. He ran back into the house to tell his mom that he had seen one of these massive orbs fly over and that the three of us had viewed it together. So I'm sitting there looking, and I'm looking up, and I see what looks like flash bulbs going off in the trees.
Wow. Wow.
And I said, I'm seeing these things that look like flashbulbs going off in the trees. And Chris says, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. And silently I said, boy, I sure do wish they would move out into the open. And they did. So yeah. I'm telling you that's what happened. I'm not giving you any other interpretation of it, that I'm telling you the sequence of events. I wish they would move into the open, and they did.
Yeah.
So they came into the open, and then it was like 100 flash bulbs went off for many minutes. Okay,
wow.
So that stopped. So I went, wow, that was amazing. And Chris says, yeah. He says, sometimes they come out when they do that flash, then they turn to these gigantic orbs right in front of you. Well, I didn't see that. But so I says, well, is it over? Chris says, I think they're still here. So I kept looking around, and I looked up, and just above the trees, I began to notice what looked like purple smoke or purple haze. And it had this like undulation to it, like it was the surface of a lake.
Okay.
But it looked like purple smoke, surface of the lake, right above the trees. And I watched, and I says, wow, I'm seeing this purple aura. And Chris has a little trouble seeing it at night, so he didn't see it, but never mind, it was clear to me. And I'm looking up, and all of a sudden, it vanishes. And within seconds, Chris says, okay, that's it, they're gone. I mean,
wow.
There was no communication that the thing had disappeared other than he felt they were gone.
Yeah, and he didn't see it. He couldn't see
it,
correct?
No, he does not have great night vision anymore. So anyway, so it disappeared, and we went inside and told everybody about all of our great experiences. And so we finished up, and Sharon and I left the next day and went back to our place in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and Chris and I talked on and off for a week while I decided what I was going to do with Chris going forward. I didn't, because I had other obligations that would just, I couldn't just go all in or whatever, I thought. So, of course, I'm coming to the realization this entity didn't care what your plans are. So Sharon and I started getting sprayed with water that came out of the middle of the air. Now, look, we did everything we could, everything we possibly could to try to find the leak or the source or whatever. And finally, she was in one end of the house and I was in the other. And both of us got squirted nearly simultaneously. I went down to where she was. She says, see that water on the floor that came out of the middle of the air? And I went, okay. I says, I've heard of stuff like this. I think this is called an apport. So
right.
I went off, got my phone. I called Chris. I says, okay, we've got this thing going on. They're really, whatever this is really trying to get my attention, because there's just no explanation I can think of for what we have happened to us here. And I told him about it. I says, okay, look, I really am going to try to do something. And I want to try to build a scientific sensors package. I'll probably have to work with others and so forth. And that was kind of the beginning of the sensor thing that's now Steve and those guys have taken on the video and packaging and all this other part for Skyhub. And my part is passive radar. But anyway, and I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do totally, but I wanted to be involved in all of that. And I needed to go on and finish another year at work. And didn't decide what to do because I had contracts which needed to be finished. So with the U.S. government, I had contracts at Virginia Tech that needed to be finished. So, but I committed, within 2 weeks of being squirted by water and committed, my wife, who had a stroke a year and a half before, had almost every lingering after effect of the stroke disappear.
My goodness.
It was just like, it was just miraculous. So I had 3 heart attacks. And I was okay. I was fine. Had a coronary bypass, and doctor says, man, he says, you're the most amazing guy I've ever seen to have three heart attacks. So, but I still had this cholesterol problem that would and triglyceride problem. So I had real trouble getting good cardiochemistry. So 6 months later, I decide that I'm going to retire. I'm sorry, COVID hits, and I decide that I'm going to retire. So I go to my doctor and say, look, do a physical workup on me before I have to leave your practice because I'm going to retire and move home. And he did this workup on me, and he says, I don't know what you're doing, but you got to keep doing it. And I says, what do you mean? He said, you have a 125 total cholesterol. Your high densities are great. Your triglycerides are 50% below critical level. He says, you've got the blood chemistry of a 25-year-old athlete.
My God.
And I'm going to tell you, that was the heaviest I ever was in my life. I was not really behaving. And it was just something changed my entire body chemistry.
Well, this is something real quick. I just really wanted to touch on this because there's almost a contradiction happening with the phenomenon. Because Chris, you mentioned before how the Vatican, or was it even the Pope, who actually warned you about the potential physical effects of close proximity to these things. Yet there's also the same breath, miraculous healing. I don't know if either of you want to touch on that because it seems like a contradiction.
Well, you know, if you look at Saint Francis, people could get around him and miraculously be healed, but he died from RA, or from the stigmata, which was what they told me, that it was not more the same. So I don't know. Diana knows throughout history that people are able to help others and they never make it themselves. But I can say this. I've been on, my son does insurance work, right? He sells insurance. He's an agent. Sells health insurance. You don't mess with life. He's all into health. And he was telling me this past month that they had to in December is the end of the year, November, they have to do all the new health insurance policies at the end of the year. And so he was doing mine. And because I have ongoing condition, I guess what you call it, I'm a high risk for anybody in the insurance company. But they wanted to know the medications I was on, and come to find out that the prescriptions that the insurance company was paying from last year was $77,000 every 3 months. That's what I was on. And have been for years. I mean, very toxic stuff. But long story short, Jay, where I'm coming from is after Bob left, he even told me I should pray for my own stuff. I should pray for healing. And I never felt that I should. You know, it's about not myself, but others. I just never felt comfortable doing it. And after he left and after Sharon went through what she did, the healing, and another person or two I know, one, Bruce Fenton, he's a scientist in America. He had a friend in Australia that he called about, and she was miraculously healed. And so I got up the courage to ask, and especially when COVID hit, because you're talking being afraid. People with cancer or on these kinds of drugs I was terrified. Because of, no immune system and this COVID-19. And so I called my doctor and I said, I'm quitting all this medication. I'm afraid. And she said, you should. I think you should. And she said, you're going to need all these pain meds. I'll give you whatever you need. And I'd been on them for years because of RA is an extremely painful thing. And I quit taking these meds at once. I mean, I stopped all of it. I was afraid of it. Prednisone, all of it. And I actually got better. And I'm not on anything right now but 5 milligrams of prednisone a day. And the pain meds I'm on very rarely. I got my life back. Now, I don't know that I'm healed, but I'm not where I was. I was where I couldn't even walk. In February, last February, I was in, Bob can tell you, I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair in L.A. in February. But today, I can walk with a backpack on probably 5 miles today.
Wow.
And so.
He built his daughter a tiny house. I mean, this guy's back to living.
Well, yeah. That's fantastic news. I mean, you know, the year 2020 has been an intense year on a global scale. I mean, the coronavirus has touched pretty much every single one of our lives in one way or another, whether it be directly or via a friend or family member. Something I wanted to touch on, though, is, we're also seeing the development of higher states of control and surveillance, the ever-growing expansion of kind of a technocratic society that idolizes material gain and territorial dominance more so than making attempts at healing the planet or its people. What really fascinates me about your story, Chris, the most fascinating parts to me, at least, are the more prophetic nature of some of the experiences, especially your experiences with the lady, because it does seem as if some level of prophecy has been passed down to you, basically, or at least this is how it seems to appear. Is there anything that you can say to us about the coming years? You know, I think everyone listening would agree that we'd be good to have some, you know, some good news.
Well, this is where I don't see that good news for a while. And I don't want to be a Debbie Downer or known for, you know, preaching negativity. And I never give these prophetic things. I mean, I've wrote some of it down and I've told certain people. I even was asked to put what the lady said in writing for the Pentagon for a couple of generals there, and I did. So I've refrained from speaking this stuff all these years, being quiet about it, but just telling the story about her. And what prompted me to say what I said on a little interview I did a couple of nights ago was the fact that I knew now is the time. At least I feel it, because you see, Easter of 2019, Easter of 2019. Remember, I hadn't been talking for 8 years. I did the Richard Dolan show that fall. I did Jimmy Church three episodes that year. I did the UFO News Network that year. I went to L.A. or to San Francisco with Bob and I that first of that year, but it was always never telling it, keeping it in, until this year things prompted me to, because of the Easter 2019. So what happened was, I walk out my back door. I live on a little cabin, about 800 square feet. My wife and I, we downsized from 3,500 feet, 5 bedrooms to 2 bedrooms on a lake, a little private pond. It's 15 acres and it's got a gate, and I'm a mile from the city, less than a mile, 900 feet from the city limits. And so, but it's like being in the country, sort of, where I was raised. But so I walk out my door about 7:30, 8 o'clock that night, after supper. I felt this drawing to go out. And I can stand on my back porch and fish with a fishing pole. The cabin is only 6-8 feet from the water, and a little pier there. So I open the door. Me and the dogs, we go out, a Chihuahua and a Border Collie. And as soon as I open the door, Jay, on the other side of the pond, which is about, I don't know, 50, 75 yards across. It's very long but narrow, and the trees are tall, 80-foot pines, a lot of them. But on the other side of the pond, way up in the air above the trees, one of those orbs appeared. And when it appeared, I knew it was excited, because it started flashing, 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 like, hello, I'm glad to see you come out the door. That's what I knew. It was waiting on me.
Right.
So here starts this erratic behavior. I mean, nothing like I had seen, that excited, that it all of a sudden it took off down, straight down in a spiral, like a big spiral, and it's flashing red, yellow, white, just brilliantly. It's about the size of a beach ball. And it gets to the ground on the other side of the pond and stops. and it's just sitting there. And all of a sudden, it eases out over the water like a person walking, and the chills hit me so bad, I just dropped to my knees, and I said, "Lord, protect me. I'm not leaving. Just don't let it get too close." And I'd been warned by NASA. I had friends from NASA. I'd been warned by even the Pope through Diana not to let him get too close. And my friend Hal Pavelmeyer said that they could, the energy was so great it could kill you instantly. But that's not their intention. It wanted to come see me, and it did. It all of a sudden moves out over the pond. Now it's going up and down 10 feet. And it gets out over the center of the pond, and I'm pulling my cell phone out, and I'm holding it shaking like a leaf, and I'm pointing it at this thing, and I thought I'm fumbling for video, right? And I never hit record. Yeah, yeah. Didn't realize I didn't hit record. And it's jumping up and down. It's 25, 30 feet from me in this, over the pond, and I could see the every time the orb would go down towards the water, it'd go about inches off the water, and it'd shoot back up. And it was inside of a being that if you ever seen the movie The Predator, where this translucent entity's on a tree limb or running around, that's what it looked like with an orb inside of it. I have a video of one appearing, an orb, and there's a lady standing next to me, two of them. And I'm not taking it. The lady beside me's taking it. They're at my house. And she got a video of one coming out of the orb, an entity. So anyhow, I looked up after a few minutes, and I realized I never hit play. Record.
Right.
So I hit the button record, and the minute I did, it is like somebody switched it off. But it went to that orb, would go to the down towards the water, and it would flash like a flash bulb, like Bob was saying. It would move up middle ways of its body, flash like a flash bulb. It'd move up to its head 10 feet, flash. I filmed that for 17 minutes and 50 some seconds.
That was
this past 2019 Easter. And so after that all happened, I began to, and I'm under this agreement with Hollywood not to speak. And I had been strictly told, you can never talk. You can't talk. Not do we get this thing going, you'll spoil it, blah, blah, blah. So I would never talk. I went against them. And I called a friend. I said, I've got to tell it. It's in my head. I have got to tell it. And so it made me start talking. I immediately contacted the first person or the last one that called me and ended up doing 10 interviews and then the first in-person one in California. But the whole thing was this entity said, now's the time you got to start talking. The trouble is looming for 2020. The apocalypse is coming. The truth, the revealing. The word apocalypse is not the end of the world. It means to reveal that which is hidden. It's a Greek word. To reveal, the revealing. In other words, 2020, I predicted it was going to be told. And it did. The U.S. government did within a month or two. And I also said that this entity said that they wanted disclosure and they wanted the correct way and they were going to help me with photo, video, and witness.
This is the lady that, now that we're talking about, is it?
No, this entity that come, and it could have been her. I couldn't tell what it was other than a translucent entity with an orb in it.
Right, okay.
So remember, for 5 years I didn't speak.
Yeah.
And then I met the lady, I spoke. Then right away, Diana come into this whole thing, and we become very good friends, and she brought Hollywood into the deal, and then I got quiet for 8 years. And this entity come at Easter and said, now's the time, we're going to help you. And so I was going to bust, or I had to tell it. It was just a knowing. I kept dreaming it every night, future events. And so I got the courage up to start telling this whole thing. And that's where it leads to some of the prophetic things that the lady told me. And this entity that came again, which was probably her or something she sent, said the same thing. And something I've hid for all these years was that I saw a war coming to America. I saw a war on our soil. I saw a sub attack on New York City. And I told this to several people for several years now. I mean, for the last, it's been known for, since the lady, I told certain people what I saw. And even Bob, I'm sure I told him that I saw a sub pull up and eject a little small boat and go back down. And this thing goes up into New York City and detonates a bomb. And that terrified me. I saw that in 2007. And other things. So I pray that the right people, and Bob is one of them, that can tell the right people to take precaution. And that's what it's all about, is knowing ahead of time, you know, what to look for. It's just so funny that there are four carrier groups right now, two on the East Coast and two on the West Coast, patrolling with big, giant amounts of ships looking submarines and stuff right now.
What do you think the necessary steps are for people to take? I mean, have you been given any inclination, or have you been given any direct information about what is needed from, I don't know, humanity or individuals? Has there been anything given to you in that regard?
I'm sorry I'm having to tell this, but I think that the right people are listening that could keep an eye out for that kind of thing and maybe can stop it all. And it is no truth, it may not come true, but I'm just telling you what I was told that many years ago and then again. And funny, let me say this, if it has any weight to it. When that being come in Easter, it says, and I told this on Jimmy Church and Dolan, it said that going to help you. Same thing the lady said, with photo, witness, and video. And what happened November? That year, November, I get an email from Bob. So it was right after, not far after Easter, within 6 months, Bob comes. And what a witness he is. And he's not the only one. There's many others, but, you know, Bob's in the intelligence world. And he's a professor. He's a genius. And he's the right guy to help research this stuff. And it was the lady that brought him. The angels, I know it was. His wife was healed from this, so I give it all to her, the mother. And then this year, here I come, these generous people start sending cameras. I just got a brand new Nikon. A doctor sent it to me, said, Merry Christmas. And it's $1,000 wow. Camera, iPod, extra batteries, lenses. I'm just so thankful.
That's for amazing.
Having friends. That, you know, and then I get another friend, Joel Griffin Dodd, and San Diego sends me a psionics night vision. He said, use this to help tell the world. And since this stuff come, there's no telling how many videos I have. I know I've gotten 30 in the last, since Thanksgiving. And I don't go out that much because it's cold and RA don't mix. And it's rained for the last 3 days, but it's definitely an increase in activity. And I believe that once all this darkness leaves and this fear, that good times will come again and we'll see peace. But I'm worried about the next 6-8 months. I honestly am. And I felt like if I didn't tell this, if something went wrong, I would never live it down.
Well, I mean, for me personally, I try and, when I'm talking about, even with just friends and family, when I'm talking about all the situations that are going on in the world right now, for me personally, it kind of helps to almost see it as the planet, as a single individual human, as one being, and probably at a very early stage in its life, really. I mean, you look at your own life, and as a child, you know, you only know a certain amount, and you're quite ignorant to the world, and as you grow, you make mistakes, and you learn from those mistakes, and you do have to go through a certain degree of pain and difficult situations to gain some level of wisdom. And as you, you know, become an elder, you hopefully have collected a good amount of information and you can provide a wise outcome, but you've gone through a lot to get to that place. And I sometimes think that the planet can be seen in the same way. And, for me, major events like coronavirus or anything else that causes like global pain, it's in some way could be attributed to the same growing path as a single human being. You know, we have to learn from these events. We have to take from these situations wisdoms, because there's always wisdom. I believe there is, at least there's always wisdom in every situation that's negative. There's something to be found in it. So I don't know if you see that in a similar way, but I would like to imagine that the negatives of this are leading towards a positive. At least that's how I try and view things.
One thing I was told, or actually became a knowing, is shown by these, they put it in my head anyhow, I can say, because I don't come up with this stuff, but the way they described it to me was that Earth is a living entity just like we are. Maybe this lady is a representation of that entity. I'm not sure, but I feel that she would, I can tell you they are protecting this planet. And if we don't keep it, if we let it get too far, I think that the frequency that we put out as a collective, if it's negative and dark and in fear, I think the Earth senses that and begins to react to it in a direct way, negative way. Sort of like a dog trying to get rid of fleas on its back. So, yeah, I've seen this, and I've told this before. But everything's alive, even the trees. And something John Alexander told me a long time ago, I'll never forget, that he was doing an experiment in this university, and they wired up these plants, and they could take scissors and walk over to that plant with intentions to cut it, and the sensor would go nuts. But if they had no intention to cut that plant and they walked up to it with scissors just to fake, the plant would never react. So it knew what intentions were. And that has helped me understand a lot of this more. But I don't want to be known as a doom and gloom guy. I just want to put out this little bit of warning that I saw, because I feel a little bit like the watchman that I have to. But I think good times will come after all this passes. But I'm praying for it. We just need to all just be precautious and hold our faith and not let any negativity into our lives. I get rid of negativity. I can't bear it. I can't be around it. I can't listen to it. I can't see it. If I did allow it in my life, I would never interact with this stuff. I can say that, because it doesn't like negativity.
No. Yeah. And that's something that I've always said myself, just in regards to my own experiences, because, it actually kind of going back to something we were talking about before, when I asked you whether or not you engaged in the type of contact that involves consciousness, and you said that you hadn't even heard of that until about a week ago. But, you also spoke about the fact that you, in your own way, came up with a prayer, because obviously you spoke with God and you asked for something to come and make itself present. And that is actually a very similar idea to this concept of a universal consciousness and accessing that consciousness and then actually being able to initiate some level of contact with this phenomenon. And the idea that everything is essentially all connected. Do you think that maybe initiating contact with this phenomenon through the expansion of consciousness, through using meditation or perhaps these types of more holistic approaches, do you think that that's something that they want us to do?
Yeah, I think that they're going to, one thing I was told at Easter of 19, that there was going to be the revealing, or the apocalypse, which is the revealing. Some might call it disclosure, but they want it to happen. They want it so we can evolve and we can awaken to this. It changes a person's life to know. I mean, it completely changed me from a hunter that has records size bear and deer and stuff I've hunted most of my life. I grew up with a shotgun, or I was shot in the back at 10 years old. I killed my first deer at 5, you know, so I come from the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And but my whole life is not like that anymore. I've just picked up a little spider in my shop and took it outside and set it down under the building so it wouldn't rain on it. I just don't do that. I can't imagine harming anything that's living anymore. And that happened directly because of my experience. Positive things happen after my family all experienced it. We all became together tighter, and now we have a very close family, all because of the isolation, you might say. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of thought on what causes it. You know, you got 8 billion people right at it, billions with a B, and you only got thousands that experienced it report it.
Yeah,
I mean, how many thousand a year worldwide? It's like the smallest minute number.
Oh yeah, I've never reported my experiences.
Right. So to answer your question about summoning these things, you might practice something dark and summoning dark entities, but to get this, I don't believe that. I just don't know that I could teach somebody how to make it come, unless you just, I don't know. I have my own way of doing it. It's not like, I just don't have this particular thing that I do. I can say this. A friend from NASA once told me, he said, why don't you try asking the lady permission? Just always give her thanks. Thanks. And other people know, you know what I'm saying? So those early scientists helped me understand it more and figure it out more. And this particular one I was talking about, it was Tyler that told me that.
Well, that's actually something that, you know, interests me, because I agree with you, it's not something that you can teach. I mean, I have my own way of going out, which I think would be probably completely different in regards to just how I formulate my thoughts and what I say, probably very different to you, but we both have had experiences. Now I have to admit, you know, my experiences, I've had orange orbs come down quite close to my house. They hovered above the roof of my house. That was the closest I've ever had an experience with the phenomenon. So that kind of is the max of mine, but that was enough for me, and that changed my reality completely. But I can't explain to people precisely how. I've tried my best, and actually one of the things that I started doing right at the beginning when I first created this channel, Project Unity, was that I was just going off into the forest in the middle of like nowhere where no one could hear me. I'd set my camera up and I'd just try and talk to people about what I believe this is, you know, what this represents. And because I'd had this success from calming my mind down, from getting into a clear state, and just asking for anything that is coming from a loving perspective, you know, a peaceful perspective, something that, you know, genuinely has a loving feeling towards humanity and is here to help. If there is anything out there that can actually interpret this, hear it, feel it, sense it, to make themselves known to me. And after repeating this over and over in all sorts of different ways, and just essentially projecting those thoughts out into the universe, or at least visualizing that that's what I'm doing, I had success. And I can't particularly explain, you know, there's no specific rules or regulations to this. I honestly think that at the end of the day, the experiences that we have with these entities, especially if it's rooted in some form of initiating contact, it's about your intention. It's about whether or not you believe it. You know, people can go out there and try and do this, but if they don't actually believe that they're going to see anything, then I think that that's exactly what they're going to get. And so I don't know if you agree with that, but it just seems to me that there does have to be some deep level of intention, some level of knowing. I'm sure as a man of faith that you would understand the concept of having some faith in the fact that this is real. I usually say, because obviously as someone that's constantly trying to talk about this stuff, and I'm trying to make it sensible, because I do have a lot of people that have given me comments about how this is all woo-woo science and junk science, and I've had my own experiences, so that's difficult. But at the same time, basically, I think that it's just really important that people understand that this type of thing is actually real. It can happen, and it's happened to yourself, and it's happened to myself and countless others. And so I've kind of gone off on a little bit of a trail now, and I've forgotten my original question, but I don't know if either of you just want to comment on what I've been babbling about.
Well, I'll say one thing. It's an idea that's going around in the intel world and some scientists, because I've been working with some right for a long time. Not just in the last month, I'm talking over the last 10 years. But there's a belief, or I've been told that they believe about 85% of those here experiencing this stuff have some sort of Cherokee bloodline somewhere in their history, Cherokee Indian and or Scottish, Scotch-Irish. So could that be? I mean, they're thinking, why don't everybody see it and only certain ones? So they're searching for keys, and one of them is bloodline.
Like a genetic predisposition to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they say, and if you don't have it, you don't see it. You don't interact with it. And that's not me making this up. That's coming from some very, if I said the names, everybody would know who they are. That is suggesting this, right? I'm here for the ride.
Right.
But maybe that explains why it's not so universal. But I think that they're preparing us that can see it, such as yourself, to wake up and start telling the world what you know. That's why you're so... You know, some might say, well, Jay's gone off the deep end. He's not doing what he used to do. All he's doing is talking about aliens or UFOs now. So you're spreading the word.
Yeah,
you're
some people have said that.
What they want you to do.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, like I said before, I kind of went off on a tangent. I think that it is rooted in some level of intention. And I try and put it forward to people as this is, you know, in my opinion, the idea of initiating contact. Having faith in that requires about as much faith as a scientist has in their hypothesis. Like, you know, that's still a level of faith that they have, that they're on the right track. And I think that that's all it really requires, is for you to have that level of open-mindedness and expansion of your sense of reality, where you're able to, you know, welcome this stuff into your life and accept it. And if you're not ready, I don't know if it will interact. I mean, there are cases, obviously, of abductions and essentially intrusions into people's lives. And actually, one thing I'd like to ask you in regards to that is, do you think that that's the same type of phenomenon that we're dealing with when it comes to people who have had what they would really consider to be quite traumatic, evasive types of experiences which they didn't ask for? Do you think that that's a different type of thing?
Absolutely. I think you get what you put out. You know, there's negative that can get right in on you and influence you, possess people, demonic entities. And if you're not protected, you're open for that. Straight up. I mean, this world is like a video game. When you buy an Xbox and you take certain games are snowy, all snow. Certain games are all water. And certain games, they're just different. They have all their parameters. And all you're allowed to do is play that game. You can't change the programming. You can only play that game and hope you survive it. Well, this earth is just like that. It's just an illusion. It's not real. It is real, but it's an illusion. Jesus even said, if you had the faith of a tiny seed, you could wake up and make miracles, make mountains move. So all he was telling us is how to live here and to love one another, right? So this world is programmed with ghost, with good and evil, and you can't change it. However many people want to be atheist or whatever and make all these claims, you cannot change the makeup of this world. The matrix has all that. It's about life and death. You come here and you live a short time and you die. If you don't do it right, maybe you lose your soul here, because this is one of the worst levels of suffering and just greed and evil. And I mean, most people suffer here. Thousands, millions die of starvation and eaten by animals and killed by snakes and all kinds of horrible deaths and trauma here. It's not roses, you know. Only the elite enjoy the fruits of this world. Most people suffer, you know, or have, you know, this terrible things that happen to family members. It's just not the best world, and you can't change it. No matter how many scientists want to try to prove it, in a few years they're going to be dead and gone, and all their thoughts are gone. You better try to get it right while you're here, or you may not. You may lose your soul here. Let's hear it from Bob. I've probably spoken.
Yeah, you've been very quiet, Bob. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, I just want Chris to tell his story. There are several points that I'd like to make that are parallel or I think impact on how people view Chris and should view him. In 2015 and 16, when people started coming and seeing him, included Tom DeLonge and Jim Semivan. That was before, I'm making a point now, just so you understand, I'm doing this for emphasis. That was before all the revelations, before the WikiLeaks stuff came out. So I don't know why people think TTSA came together 5 seconds before that news conference in 2017.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
These guys have been doing stuff, interacting with Chris, working together, laying their plans for a long time. And I know this because they came and visited Chris. Okay, now that's not at his home. I've seen pictures of Semivan and Semivan's wife at Chris's house. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Tyler, Deanna calls him Tyler D, for reasons you can hear on Lex Fridman's podcast interview of her, which is hilarious. I had no idea where the name came from. But anyway, Tyler D sent Chris a picture from his phone. And Chris has this picture. I've seen it. We've put it in presentations for Chris, and he's displayed it. And this picture is of an envelope half covered up with a paper, with a napkin. The envelope on the right, you can see the right side of the address on the envelope. That's Chris Bledsoe's address. And the napkin has the presidential seal and Camp David on it. And that says to me that Tyler D took the things that Chris has been telling you about and briefed whoever it might have been prior to 2016 that could have said Tyler D can come to Camp David and brief him on the stuff that Chris has been telling us. That is what that photo implies. Okay. Chris has so much evidence. It's just unreal. So Chris and I have been talking about this, but I'm going to tell you straight up. COVID has gotten in the way of Chris and I continuing to work together and me doing other things. So I chose to go ahead and retire. Chris was correct that I think most people know that I was involved in the intelligence community for a long time. And then I retired from the intelligence community, became a professor at Virginia Tech. And so from that time until this past May, two things. I was on the faculty at Virginia Tech, chief scientist for the Hume Center for National Security and Technology, and I was a professor. And I had lots of graduate students, taught a few courses, did a lot of research. But last May, I retired. I'm adjunct faculty now and I no longer hold any kind of security clearance whatsoever. I am no longer in the intelligence community and have no involvement with them. Okay, so things I'm telling you now are based on my things I say outside are based on my experience and my knowledge of how all that stuff works, not on current intelligence that I am able to read because I no longer have access. But I'm going to tell you, the things that are pertinent to Chris's story that support the things he said are the reactions of others that are at working at an extremely high level in the United States government. And there's one person in the United States that can order someone or enable someone to go to Camp David and give a briefing. Just one. And we know who that was prior to 2016. Okay, so just really astounding. So somebody high up is paying attention to what Chris said. It's just some of the stuff is frightening. I'm not going to deny that it's frightening. What I'm hoping is, me personally, what do I hope? I hope that what Chris has seen is a warning that if we don't straighten our act up, bad things will happen, so that there's hope for us not having to go through all of that. So, you know, that's how I live my life, is try to be hopeful. I'm going to continue to try to help Chris organize his the data, the evidence. And look, everybody knows that Chris has taken a lot of videos and pictures and so forth. And Chris is not a videographer or a professional photographer. So each individual piece may or may not be convincing. The thing that's kind of really startling is the volume of stuff he has. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy just cannot be sitting down and putting all this stuff together on a computer. The volume of it is huge. So I'll just give you one other piece. Chris had a photo of Lori Wagner, who is lives in a Los Angeles area and who's a friend of Chris and helps Chris. She's good friends with Richard Dolan and others. Has people in TTSA on speed dial and that stuff. But anyway, so Lori was visiting Chris with a friend of hers. And this friend and Chris and she were walking through a wooded area. And one of these bright flash bulb things goes off, and the friend picks up his camera, not Chris, not her, this friend, takes a picture. And this picture, I'd seen it, and it looked interesting, but it had not been, nobody had done anything major with this picture. So I took this picture prior to Chris going to San Francisco to the conference to put it in his presentation, and I processed it. Now, that doesn't mean I added anything. It meant I changed light levels, contrast, other kinds of things. There were no pixels added or subtracted, so there's no additive work. This is just regular processing like one might do in Photoshop, not hacking it together. And when I process this thing, this orb goes on this kind of wavy path behind Lori Wagner's back. And out of the side of this orb, it's just unreal. There are two human arms poking out of this orb. And then I processed off in front of Lori in the direction she was looking. And there are two shadow-like figures in front of her. One is immediate, and one you need to look at that's a little further beyond the immediately obvious one. And there are two of them in this photo. I mean, that was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen when I processed it. And I'm just going to tell you, he has a ton of stuff like that. The stuff needs to be processed. The story needs to be written down in kind of this linear fashion. So from like time to time to time, when things happen and so forth. And Chris knows an experiment that I want to do. I'm not going to tell the details of this experiment, But I know of an experiment that Chris was involved with, and the experiment is astounding. He can tell you from the first time he showed me the evidence of the experiment and the content of the experiment and how it was conducted that I have been chomping at the bit to do this experiment with him. And we're just going to figure out how to do it carefully so that when the results come, they're undeniable, that I don't have an involvement in the collection of the data, and Chris does whatever he does on his end, and we'll just see how it goes. But if it goes like it did before, it'll be amazing.
Are you able to give any details on that, on what that experiment is?
That's what I'm trying not to do. Let's just say it's taking a picture, and the fact that it takes a picture of a UFO is amazing.
Right.
Just going to say it's take a picture of a UFO, and it's clear it's a UFO. There's no doubt it's a UFO. If we can duplicate that experiment and do it in a blind way so that I'm not involved, et cetera, and yet still get the same result, it'll be amazing. It will be amazing. Just amazing. Okay, so anyway, look, Chris has a lot of interesting stories, but he also has a ton of evidence that taken together, the volume of evidence, the different types of evidence, video, audio, photographic, processed some of his photos. I'll give you an interesting one. Jim Semivan and his wife stood at the famous burning tree, and a picture was taken of them. And no one had ever processed this photo. So I processed it and enhanced the area around Semivan and his wife. And there were orbs all around them that they did not know were there.
Wow.
No one had ever processed this so that these orbs could be seen.
Is that image online? Is that image online? Is that image available online?
I don't know. I don't know whether it is or not. Chris has it. It's in a presentation he did. Chris contacted Semivan and says, did you know that when you had that picture taken, you were surrounded by orbs? And Semivan's only comment was, I'm glad they didn't follow me home. So the other thing I want to comment is, I am not the only person who's gone to be around Chris, had experiences, and they continue after you leave him.
Right.
I'm not the only one. It's happened to many, maybe most, people who have gone to see Chris, had an interaction with him, been around him, seen stuff there, left, and stuff continues to happen. I'm just telling you, it's enough for me as a scientist to want to try to understand more about the phenomenon.
Well, I have to admit that's actually quite similar to some of the stories that come out of Skinwalker Ranch in regards to what they sometimes call, I think some of the NIDS team would call them hitchhikers. And Chris, maybe you can jump in here, but do you think that your property itself is anomalous in some way like Skinwalker Ranch? Or do you think that this is more just centered around yourself, or is it the property?
No, and we're talking about two different things here. It's without a doubt, many witnesses have been with me, like Lori Wagner's one. I flew out to San Diego, and we were going to meet Hollywood executives, right? And she was the person to pick us up from the airport, and another fella come out from Philadelphia kind of as somebody to watch my back, because I was told I needed that as I made that trip. And actually, Homeland Security bus, a big 45-foot one, was there when I walked out the restaurant. We got out of the airplane, went straight to the restaurant. And when I got out, there's this giant bus sitting across the parking lot at the front door. And these men get out and they just look at me and smile and then turn their back. But my phone was going crazy in the restaurant. But long story short, just one example there, Lori and her daughter and this friend from Philadelphia and I, they wanted to go after that airplane trip, after the meal. We went down to Encinitas, where Tom lives, and a local beach there just up the street. And there's a cliff right in front of the hotel on the Pacific Highway. And we pulled up to the cliff, got out, and was standing there. And I began to feel their presence, and all of a sudden these orange balls, two of them, come on out over the ocean, miles out, a few miles out. And I said, there they are. And, you know, typical doubt, all of a sudden, oh, they're helicopters. Well, I've never seen an orange helicopter in the orb, you know, with this. And so I just let them try to decipher what they were seeing. And for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, these orbs would appear and go out, stay stationary again, move, you know, like a long ways or closer, in and out. And they'd move position. They'd go out, they'd come back on. So that went on a half hour. And then it kind of faded away, and we didn't see them for some time. And it was time to go to the hotel. So when we turned our back to the seat and started walking towards the car, all of a sudden, Lori's daughter, Gabby, says, "What in the world is that?" And we all looked straight up, and about 200 feet over our head were these two orbs, and orange ones that were out over the sea. Now they're this translucent blue, and they look like, they were very low, just twice as high as the trees. And they weren't going fast at all, very slow, right over our heads, straight up. And then they looked like raindrops when they merged together. I mean, like a glob, bloop, they went together, just like two water drops would. Wow. And all of a sudden, it fired off towards the Mexico border, like out of a cannon. So... It's happened in Las Vegas. This has happened in Pennsylvania. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's not the land.
No.
It's the person. But none like Skinwalker Ranch now. If you know the territory and you know that the tribes of Indians that lived there, the Utes, some of them were cannibals, and they practiced this dark magic stuff. They enslaved people. And that's all they're experiencing, just negative, negative energy. And yeah, that'll come home with you if you don't have any grounding. And right. Even if you do, you got to fight it away. So it's not the same. It's nowhere close to the same.
Can we talk about your connection to Dr. Diana Pasolco? And she's the author, for those that don't know, of the book American Cosmic, because... You mentioned in an interview with Richard Dolan that you entered into a period of your life where you couldn't really talk about what you were doing and who you were speaking with. And you go on to say that Dr. Pasolco outlines some of this in her book. Are you able to kind of just give us any more details as to what was happening during this period of your life and how you got connected to Diana Pasolco?
Well, yeah, I remember. Well, let's just kind of come in from two angles. We'll come from her side and from my side. And I know it was all about the lady, because in 2012, I wasn't talking. And in January and February, March, I was not talking. And for the previous 5 years, I hadn't spoke. I never wanted to speak again about it because my kids were little and they were embarrassed. One of them moved out to college and didn't want to come home because of the stress that he got over this. You know, it was terrible. But somehow or another, along about Easter, a month or two before, Diana grew up with a brother that she saw orbs following her little brother when they were young children. And she told me about that. And she's a professor of religious studies at a college that my kids went to, one of them. My daughter-in-law, too, graduated there. My son, Jeremy, graduated there. And she, in her studies, religious studies, she began to see comparisons in the biblical texts and the UFOs. So she really got into studying it along of that year, 2012, if I'm saying it right, and I believe I'm pretty correct. So that launched her into the study. Just so happened, she, from what I understand, called MUFON, or MUFON got a hold of her and wanted to know why everybody was reporting angelic experiences. Although MUFON never told this, they had a lot of that. Like, she's told me she had 2,000 reports they sent her to digest.
Wow.
So that's the majority of what they get, you see. They only tell you about the negative ones or the anal probes or that kind of stuff. So it got her interest into studying the phenomenon, and she reached out to them about who is the closest person to me I can study that, you know, thinks of angels. Well, correctly they pointed straight at me, right? And that was just a week or a month or two before the lady came. So she actually reached out to MUFON to get me to come to speak so she could come see me and visit me. I had no idea this was going on. The lady came 2 weeks before that and said, go tell your story. 1 week later, MUFON called, and the next week I was with Diana.
Wow.
That's how we met, and it was early on in her career. And she and I started writing a book together called Seraphine. And we still have that manuscript, a part of it. And we had a real hard time publishing it. Nobody wanted to publish it. They just squished everything Chris was trying to say or do. So I was really involved with some of these scientists, and Tyler is one of them. And I kept telling her about my experiences with Tyler, and she didn't want to meet him. She was afraid of him. And eventually he made his way into this, into her life and I guess they were looking at her to the lady. Just all I can say is something miraculous directed it all, as it was at me, and it wasn't her. It was all guided, and this is where we are now. She wrote this book, and she was told that she couldn't write about me. She was told, warned. They didn't even want to put me in the book, period. This is facts. My story's been stepped on and stepped on and squished and hushed for a long time. And I've been a pretty good guy of not telling it, just sitting back, collecting the evidence, and you know, quietly studying with these people. When you're around them, they don't want you telling a lot of stuff. And I'm learning why.
Sorry, go on.
I'm sorry. I'm done. I'm just rambling.
No, don't worry. I was just going to ask if you have any indication as to who you feel is working essentially against you, because, I mean, you have a lot of interest from different government and intelligence fields, and they seem to be supportive and positive of this. And, you know, a lot of people in the UFO community, when they're talking about having interference run on their stories or being, you know, being threatened or anything like that, it's usually attributed to the intelligence community or some agency. So I don't know if you feel that there's another shadow group within the government that's against your work, or is this something else? Any ideas?
Most of it was before 2016. Before 2016, it was not so public. But after that, you know, the government really released the secret in 2016. Mm-hmm. They loosened up the whole thing. That was about the time Diana's book, she was in the middle of writing it. So, yeah, before that time, I was afraid. Definitely afraid to mention a name or anything. But after that, I was told, why don't you go talk? Dr. Pavlmeyer said, why don't you go talk? Why aren't you telling your story? It's important you tell it. This was around that time. And I said, because I felt threatened. How I don't feel safe, you know, going public, as I've been told not to. And he said that the government had loosened up on the secret, and they were going to tell some truths over the next few years. Nothing fast, but he said, I believe by 2025, it'll all be out there.
2025.
That's what he told me.
Okay.
And that's why I tell it now. And I don't worry. I did have people come and threaten, and there were different groups that they didn't want me telling what I had. Threaten my wife and children, but they've disappeared, and there are others that are watching over me from that group of people. So I've got a speed dial on my phone. If I felt threatened, I know who to call.
Well, I'm sure you do. I'd love to ask you if any of the entities that you've encountered or anything that you've seen have left behind what we consider as metamaterials.
I had some of that material. I give a piece to Tom and TTSA.
I was going to ask, did you do that? Yeah.
Yeah, I gave a piece to John Alexander, which I'm sure Bigelow ended up with, or Dr. Putoff. I know he got hands on some of it, and I have other friends that have it that are scared to death of, you know, public, and they confided in me, and it was through me that I took these people to this person's house so he would let them study his material, which turned out to be real stuff as well. It's actually been taken and classified.
I was going to ask if do you ever have any updates from any of the materials that you let go of, or have they all kind of vanished into a dark hole?
Well, I don't know how much I can say about all that, but I was left with material, but when I first was introduced to this stuff was in 2010 or so. You know, that was part of the experiments. So, you know, I'm no stranger to metamaterials. I've known about this and I've handled it for many years, long before anybody else knew about it. You know, that's what the whole thing with Diana was about, to let her handle it and see it and tell the world about it. But remember, I was there 3 years ahead of time dealing, or 2 years maybe, doing experiments here and there. And actually, when it was put in my hand, my wife and children were there witnessing it. And when he said, "What do you think about that?" I said, "It looks like aluminum." And when the other piece went in the other hand, it shot energy through me to where I'm almost blacked out from it. And so he looked at me and said, "Why you?" I said, what just happened? What do you mean? Why me?" He said, "Well, I've never seen that big a reaction. And why you?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know." And that was many years ago. That was a long, wow. So, yeah. And I understand it was a gift to us.
Right. And can I ask how that arrived to you?
Said, "No, I was." They brought it to me, they my brought it house.
To yeah. To see it how great. It reacted to you.
Yeah, they know if you're lying, if you've had experiences or not, by testing you with this stuff.
Do you ever regret knowing what you know or experiencing what you experienced? I must admit that personally, I've sometimes been frustrated that I've had experiences because so many people are not prepared to embrace a reality where my experiences or your experiences could be real, and instead would much sooner assume we're lying about what we have witnessed for one reason or another. Do you feel the pros outweigh the cons when it comes to the path you found yourself on, Chris?
I live it every day, yeah. I feel more now that it's time is now that I need to do what I was asked to do. And during these troubling, scary times is to try to bring some calmness and light to the world, and no more darkness. But yeah, I've struggled with it. But now I've almost become a hermit. In fact, I would if I had the chance. My wife knows I want to move out in the country somewhere, and I don't care if I ever see people anymore. And that's, I could live off the land. That's how much struggle I've had to deal with this. And when you walk out the door, here they come, 10, 15 of them sometimes, not just one. We're talking a lot of them. And here comes the whole process again. So, I can't get away from it. It is what it is. My kids love me. I have a new grandchild, so I feel like I'm a very blessed person. I have very good friends like Dr. McGuire and Sharon. We just love them as friends and others. I've met so many people, so I'm not going to look back and regret anything. But I have struggled with it. I sure have. But it is what it is. But I know we got to end this thing sooner or later.
That's a healthy way to look at it. And the last question I actually have for you, I messaged your son Ryan on Twitter to see if he had any suggestions for what I should ask you, and he told me to ask you about the Great Deception, saying that you would know what it was. So what is the Great Deception?
This is something that's in the Bible. Remember, one thing that rings in my head is when that lady was talking to me, she said, they're scripting the Bible. They're making it play out just like it is written. And in that book of Revelations, it tells you that in the last days that even the very elect will be deceived, will not understand that they're even being deceived. And I'll leave it at that. We're in those times right now. There's a great deception happening, and I haven't figured it out, but I know it's oppressing people. It's the internet is like an alien, you know, and I think that has a lot to do with it. Because, you know, tell them what you're looking at there. And people's minds are so fragile, they take all this stuff in. So this is just deception that's happening around the world. And Google and all of them is not helping it with censoring people. So this is like an alien. It's like the beast that the Bible talks about. And I'm not selling organized religion, believe me. I'm not into organized religion, but I never lost Jesus Christ. What I was raised to believe, and people can mock that all they want, but I would say whatever faith you have, I would find it. And I think everybody will during these dark times. If things get worse, they'll be looking for their faith, and it'd be a good thing for us all. So I can't just know that there's a deception happening right now, and we all need to try to figure out what the truth is. Who knows?
Well, Chris, I want to thank you both, and Bob as well. I want to thank both of you. You've been more than generous with your time. Before we wrap up here, is there anything that either of you want to say to everyone listening? Any plans for the future, Chris?
Well, I'm sorry that I finally brought this truth out and it had to be on this show, and I did it in the last one. But as far as the future, just everybody think positive and be in prayer or positive thought. That's the biggest thing. Not let negativity in your life, and look for a brighter 2021. Let's just pray it all stops, because that's what the lady said. We can change it if we all are awakened.